Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. Your attention, please.
Your attention, please.
Your attention, please.
And now the moment we've been waiting for is here.
Hello, Nelson and Tasman. It's been a while. Welcome, everyone. It's my pleasure to interview one of the hosts of Evolving Health, Dr. John O'Malley, chiropractor. John, chiropractor, philosopher, researcher, father, husband, my husband, brother, friend and engineer, fixer of all things, the list truly does go on. John is passionate about many things, in particular the current healthcare model and how the medical paradigm does not necessarily have the tools to support those with chronic disease. So welcome, John. It's a bit of a novelty interviewing you today with both our children at school and childcare. So we have the opportunity. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself, your own experiences that have inspired and motivated you to become a chiropractor.
The journey into chiropractic was an odd one. I finished a degree at Canterbury and thought, well, what do I do now? And my father, who'd been going to chiropractors for years, who I always thought were a fairly dodgy bunch at that stage, he said, why don't you think of chiropractic? And I went, oh, he goes, look, at least come along and talk to my chiropractor. And I went along and I met this guy, I think his name was Clay Thompson. This is in Christchurch back in 1980, late 80s. And he seemed like an interesting chap, and he talked a bit about chiropractic and what its philosophy was. And I must admit that while I was interested in medicine, the focus on medicine seemed to be just too much on pharmacology and surgery, and he talked a lot about the idea that you can do preventative work, and I thought, well, that was quite interesting. I went to college, and I found college fairly dull. I didn't really get into it that much. In fact, I got a lot more into student politics. The most educational part of my education at RMIT was actually becoming student union president. I learned a heap about corporations and stuff because mm-hmm. that's what a university is.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of my degree, I thought, what am I going to do? I really wasn't that keen on moving into clinical practice. I found that just straight manipulation of the spine, yeah, it worked, but it didn't seem to create sustainable results. But then again, I put that down to maybe it's just because I'm just a final graduating student. And then I decided, well, I'll go and do something else for a while. I worked for La Trobe University. I started doing my doctorate. Came back to New Zealand and ended up working with a guy in Christchurch, Brian Hale. And he was, to me, the Mozart of chiropractic. He was a guy who could just look at a person and summarize what was going on with them at a much deeper level than just the structural, just the manipulation of the spine. So I guess that was my journey, and it never ends. I worked with Brian for 9 years, then I went out by myself.
Okay, so just on that holistic approach that I know Brian taught you, so it wasn't just manipulation of the spine, it was looking at the emotional being of the individual, which is very important in your clinical practice. So that moves in quite nicely. Tell us about your clinical practice, the people you can support, and what conditions you can treat.
Well, the first thing is that symptoms have always got to be viewed as an external representation of what's going on at a deeper level. So back pain is a symptom. Gut trouble is a symptom, you know, things like loose stools, constipation. Depression is often a symptom of a broader, deeper functional issue. So there's a model within chiropractic that was developed by a guy called George Goodhart, I think in the mid-60s. And Goodhart hit a similar sort of dilemma, I think, to what many of us hit in practice, which is, you know, just manipulating the spine isn't enough. And he noticed that certain predispositions, like, for instance, people with strong emotional stresses tended to show a certain pattern of pain. People with gut trouble showed a certain pattern of pain. So he developed the triangle of health, which is the basis of a technique called applied kinesiology. And George also found out that, in fact, you can analyze a lot of this by muscle testing, which is a tool whereby you can therapy localize. That means you put your hand on a sore spot, you can lock the problem in, then you can go around the body looking for what's deeper, what's more primal in terms of this problem. And sure, I mean, there's not a person who comes into my practice that I don't do some form of gentle manipulation on. And that will range from using just my hands to using some tools like a drop piece or an activator gun in the case of very young people, old people, or the very fragile. And the objective is to get to those underlying deeper patterns. So I'll also be involving people with things like, you got to go off this food, or mindfulness is a good idea, or I use homeopathy to specifically treat some patterns.
Mm. And you also look at people's emotional well-being. So we have a great status on intellectual intelligence, but emotional intelligence is something that you explore quite a bit in your clinical practice. And as a naturopath, I know that that's how people can get sick. So tell us about, how do people actually get sick?
Well, let's start with the emotional states. I mean, stress is ubiquitous. It's just about in everybody's life. And I often describe stress as being a bit like in the country hall, you know, going for the kids' Christmas show. You walk in and the air's fresh and you sit down and you say g'day to everybody and the air gets more and more stale, but you don't notice. And that's how stress builds. It develops and develops and develops and you don't notice. And then you walk out into the fresh country and you take a breath and you think, wow, do they even make air this clean? You know, it's so nice. It's such a nice, refreshing feel to it. And that's when you notice the contrast of the stale air. And patients will say to me, no, I'm not stressed. But then I'll talk to them a little bit about it. Or they might have gone on holiday or they had a long weekend. They go, how was it? Oh, it's fantastic. I was really relaxing. And you go, so you relaxed from where? And that's because stress is... It's while it's ubiquitous, it's also insidious. It quietly builds up, but it does have a recognisable pattern. And often it's the people around you that recognise it rather than you. So for instance, if you're with somebody and they do one of this, they go, that sort of deep sighing breath, particularly when they've suddenly got to do something, but you go, can you go and get it? Can you help me with that? And then they do that breath. Or they think, well, I'm going to go and do this now. And they do that breath just before they get up. Or you start talking to them about something that you know is a bit difficult for them, but they need to talk about it. They do that breath. What that is that's the diaphragm moving through a full movement. And I think it's got two roles there. One is just to stretch itself and get some air. And the other one is that if it doesn't do that, the next part of its job, which is to actually gird yourself against the stressful situation that's now developing, will become more problematic for it. Because like everything, every muscle in the body, the diaphragm needs to stretch to recalibrate its movements. And so that's one key indicator. The other one is pain at the base of the skull. So we call this suboccipital pain because the bone at the base of the skull is the occiput. Sub means below, so below the base of the skull. Suboccipital pain, and that's that sort of aching headache that starts as sort of a stiff neck but can build into really quite an uncomfortable headache. And that person, the reason the body's doing that is it goes to a very primitive reflex, which is involved with linking your eyes to your hands, improving data input into the brain so that when you throw your spear or stone, you do it with tremendous accuracy. And to do that, we tighten up these muscles to improve the data we get from them. And they become achy because we're in this state of fight flight for a long time. The other part is we also tighten the shoulder girdle. And because we tighten the shoulder girdle, another common part of that stress pain pattern is that you will get pain just either side of the thoracic, that's the part of the spine where the ribs are, where the shoulder blades are, just on the inside of the shoulder blades, you will get a stiffness and a soreness, and that might even radiate from the shoulder blades right up to the neck. And that's all to do with pre-tensioning these muscles to improve data input.
And so that, for our listeners out there, to simplify that, it's like a row of dominoes, and you can't pop one domino over without other dominoes being impacted. There's this compensatory stuff and this roll-on effect with everything that goes on in the body. And so what you're doing is you're addressing the physical as the chiropractor and the mental emotional with your AK and your own life experience as well, because you've been in clinical practice for more than 30 years now, which is quite exceptional, really. So you come with a lot of skill. I know that you also receive referrals from other chiropractors with those very difficult patients too. And so just with experience of life, you have experienced or experiencing fatherhood later in life. And how has that supported your personal growth?
Well, I want to point out firstly that I'm not a second time rounder, I'm just slow. You know, I'm a first time round parent, first time round marriage. Sam and I have been married for a bit over 8 years now, isn't it? Yeah, about that. And it's been fantastic, an interesting journey. But probably the most powerful thing that's ever happened in my life is having children. And it's funny, you've got two children, same parents, and yet they're chalk and cheese in terms of their personality types. And you can't work out why. And you're sort of looking for the rule book, and there isn't one. You know, it should go something like child after birth CD, but the CD doesn't arrive, so you've got no workshop manual. So you've got to sort of work on your feet as you go. And I think children are one of the most educational and guiding elements of our lives. And like any highly complex situation, they are a highly complex organism. They are, to some extent, unpredictable. But they also teach you about some other things like, well, I think you can love your partner, but you really don't know unconditional love till you have children, because children are the one thing that no matter what else happens, there is nothing more important than their well-being, their safety, their happiness. So, and then also, I mean, like I had a big practice in Christchurch. I mean, I'm new to Nelson, so it's establishing still, but I had a massive practice in Christchurch with mothers and babies, and I love working with mothers and babies. And I would talk about to mothers about colic and sleep and other things, but which I pretty much picked up off my old boss, Brian. But now as a father, I put all that into practice and I realized that, in fact, there's a mother-baby dyad thing that goes on. They're not two people. They're one person in two bodies. They're one being in two bodies. And if you don't treat them that way, like the big part of treating the baby to me is getting the mother right. Like colic is invariably a stress or food problem with the mother, and you sort that, it just goes away. It's actually, I'd almost put a guarantee on that. So parenting has allowed me to put into personal practice a lot of things I've put into professional practice.
Thank you. So I would have to concur, and I think children have to laugh because your Aunt Maureen said to you before Johnny, you said, well, I think, you know, it'll keep me young. And she said, you've got to be joking. It's going to age you overnight. And I look at us sometimes and I think, yeah, no, we've definitely aged 5 or 6 years overnight, depending on, you know, what activities and what musical beds have happened throughout the night. And I think most parents will laugh at that because it literally is musical beds most nights. So stress. Insomnia is one of the big stresses, of course, that we both treat in our clinical practice. But you've had a bit of stress. We've had a bit of stress in the past 8 years ourselves. Give us a little bit of insight to the past 8 years, John. It's been amazing.
Well, you know, I mean, my life had been pretty easy up until the earthquakes in Christchurch. That was charmed. I pretty much did what I like. But then, you know, a huge part of my business was business people in the Christchurch CBD. And for 12 months, that was simply closed down. So all of these people that I relied on, they no longer could come and see me. They couldn't afford it. A heap of them who'd been long-term patients, I said, well, I've got dead space. So I'll do your pro bono until you can get back on your feet. But that put economic stress on us, the fight against the insurance companies. And then we come up here, and I sort of went into my midlife crisis and decided I'm going to go and live on a farm in Marahau. Dragged you along with me, darling. Sorry about that. And 2 years, and I'm happy to be back in clinical practice. And Geeta sort of was the nudge to get us back out. And here we are in Nelson. And I got to say, it's not without its stresses because we're building, but I love the city and I like our new life and I adore my family.
Great. Oh, that's lovely. Thank you. Well, I think we should do more interviews with each other just to give people an insight into our humanness and perhaps talk a bit more about natural disasters, because obviously we're still coming out the other end of the fires in Nelson Tasman, which have generated quite a bit of stress. And it was quite an interesting experience for myself not being involved in that crisis, because we've been involved in two major disasters ourselves where it's had a direct impact on our lives. But thank you very much, John. It's interesting to interview you. We didn't argue, so that was good.
Yeah, yeah.
So thanks for coming along and giving us insight into you, John. Evolving Health, Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. and replay Sunday afternoon at 1:40, only on Fresh FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
And now the moment we've been waiting for is here.